Bill 57, House Bill 179, and continuing with House Bill 190.
We're just talking.
Yep.
Can we just redo the roll, Madam Chair? I'm sorry.
The roll? Oh, yes. I would love to. Okay, we'll do this again. With us, we have Representative Drummond, Representative Ledoux, Representative Wilson, Representative Gaddis, Representative Sadler, and Representative Seaton. On our agenda for today, we're hearing Senate Bill 57, House Bill 179, and continuing with House Bill 190. We'll begin with Senate Bill 57. I'd like to call the bill sponsor or staff to come forward to speak to the bill. And I will remind the committee that there are portions of this bill that we have already heard and passed out of committee. So with that, we'll let staff present their bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, my name is Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Gary. Senator Stevens wants to thank you and the committee for hearing this bill this morning. Unfortunately, he is currently chairing the Senate Education Committee at this time, and so he was predisposed to do that this morning. So the bill before you does three things. First and foremost, it is an effort to encourage increased parental involvement in their students' and children's literacy skills by third grade. Secondly, it changes the layoff notification deadline for teachers that are tenured and will not be retained. And then finally, it adjusts our pupil transportation for inflation. So go through the bill in a little more detail for you. As regards parental involvement, there's quite a body of evidence out there that indicates that parental involvement is key to student success and in conjunction to a certain proficiency in reading by the third grade. As the phrase I think that's going around, it's really poignant that before third grade you're learning to read, and after third grade you're reading to learn. That I think spells it out fairly clearly. There are a number of tools that states and departments use across the country. They're kind of three-pronged, the first being identification, which is an assessment, and the state is undergoing a number of assessment strategies, the second of which is an intervention once a student has been identified as being behind. And there are things such as remediation or summer school to intervene in a student's proficiency in reading. And then finally, there's policies of retention, which are more, maybe the harder hand that is employed to hold students back, potentially repeat grades and that sort of thing. All of those three areas are, to a certain extent, reserved by Alaskans as a local control issue. And so what this bill would do, rather than get involved in those three things, to instead have the state and the districts in particular better inform parents about the importance of being involved in their students' reading abilities by third grade. Another component of the state's effort that's embodied in this bill would have, at the state level, a media campaign launched that would include things such as an internet website and local television and advertising programs to just bring more awareness to this issue in an effort to have parents recognize the importance of students' literacy proficiency by third grade. So that's maybe the section one of the bill. The other two sections I won't go into deeply. It's my understanding you have heard these other two issues, the second section being the notification date for teachers that are tenured, and if and when there's a budget situation where there have to be what's called pink slips issued for layoff notifications at that date, rather than being March 16th, that it be pushed instead to May 15th. I won't belabor that point. I think you've covered that one already in the past. Similarly, as regards pupil transportation, as you may be aware, last year both bodies passed an inflationary adjustment based on the Anchorage CPI for pupil transportation. At somewhat the 11th hour, that was reduced to 1.5%. As you may know, the average is about 2.5% currently, and this bill would restore that for the next three fiscal years. That concludes the summary of the bill, Madam Chair.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Which version are we looking at? Is it you or is it another?
Through the Chair, Representative Wilson, I believe you should have before you version Y.
Y, okay.
YOLO.
That's why you have to.
Do we have any questions for the bill sponsor? Thank you. Oops, excuse me. Representative Seaton.
Madam Chair, before we go to public testimony, maybe it would be good to put on the intention of offering in a conceptual amendment. When we considered the pupil transportation section in our committee, we had a repealer section after November on November 1st, 2015, so that a contract would not interfere with the intention of many people in the legislature to get a statewide transportation contract. And that would mean that the October 2015 would roll in and would be in place, but then there wouldn't be a commitment for future years on that portion of it, because that would be up for negotiation on the statewide basis if the legislature agrees to do a statewide contract. And so I'll be offering that at the present time, at the appropriate time, but I just thought it would be good since we're going to have testimony on the bill.
Representative Wilson.
Madam Chair, at the right time, too, I think that's probably a good idea. So at the right time, I'd like to make comments on it also.
Sure.
Can I have a brief at ease?
Brief at ease. Seeing no questions, comments from the committee, Representative Drummond.
Thank you. Didn't we pass out a bill, a House bill on pupil transportation?
Right.
Similar adjustment.
That's right. And as the bill sponsor indicated, he skipped over those. There were two sections that he was pretty quick about. One was pupil transportation, because it mirrors the one we passed out, as well as the pink slip that also mirrors. So the portion that he discussed was the portion that we haven't had, which was the literacy portion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Thank you. With that, is there anyone from the department that would like to speak?
For the record, Elizabeth Noodleman, Director of School Finance and Facilities, and I'm simply here to answer any questions if you had, that would be why we're here today, to answer your questions.
Appreciate that. I know that two-thirds of this bill we've already passed out. You've answered a lot of questions on that. I think it's the literacy portion, if we have any questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll move to public testimony, and even though we got a slow and late start, I don't show anybody online. I do show two here in the audience. We'll start with John Alcantara.
Good morning, Madam. Excuse me. Good morning, Madam Chair. New building. I didn't check myself. New room, anyway. For the record, my name is John Alcantara. I do government relations for about 13,000 members of the National Education Association of Alaska. As you mentioned, parts of this bill have been heard and have passed this body. I hope there's a copy of a letter we submitted to Senator Stevens March 18th, where we mentioned the part about the notification of teacher tenure. I spent this weekend fielding about a dozen phone calls from angry teachers that how could we let something like a May 15th date occur. I will say, almost to a member, they were from the disciplines of art, music, and counselors, folks that are a little outside the general education mainstream and are a little more, I guess, worried, rightfully so, that they're smaller numbers would allow for tenured teachers to get non-retained a lot quicker in this environment of budget cutting than if they were in the kind of a general education environment. So there are a lot of things I probably didn't know when I testified on other legislation that I learned over the phone from members Saturday and as late as 9:30 last night when our flight got rerouted and back to Anchorage. So I apologize that we're coming here at this point in time, but we did submit for the record on the other side back on March 18th at least a offer that a date of April 20th or a date of sometime following the end of a legislative session, be it 5 days after session adjourns, 10 days after session adjourns, would be something to at least consider, because just like I didn't realize some of the implications to our members that are in elective type of teaching, I think some of this has moved through quickly. I realize the reason for wanting to change the date, because the legislature hasn't performed its business and we don't know exactly what schools are going to receive, but it has become certainly an issue that has been raised, and the March 16th date has been in place obviously for decades, and I think there's just a lot of angst out there amongst the members that I'm hearing from in mass now that didn't happen. I guess part of art and music and counseling, you know, just from a perspective as not only a government relations for NEA Alaska, but a father of four and three children that go to Matsu Public Schools, I can say that my daughter, who's heading off to a jazz band trip this week in Fairbanks, she goes to school at 6:55 in the morning to do jazz band and honor band every morning, and that early involvement in school, about 35 minutes before the rest of the kids, and that desire to go to school translates into all other classes. I mean, she's a phenomenal student, and I give Mr. Swalling, her music teacher, a huge props in the fact that she enjoys getting up early and going to school every day. And those are the kind of folks that certainly don't want to see us lose. Hopefully, we'll talk about other legislation down the road. But I just think I was sort of unaware and really hadn't heard from a lot of folks when other legislation was passed. And now, you know, as things happen and people hear more and hear more, I'm certainly hearing a lot more from members. So we certainly appreciate Senate Bill 57. As we say in the letter, we think it's a good bill. The inflation proofing for pupil transportation is certainly needed to keep dollars in the classroom and not going out to pay for transporting kids to and from school. But that particular section on the date, if there's any way to at least consider changing to an April date, I think the date would be late enough to get through the legislative session, as it says in the letter, while still allowing some time for the employee affected by non-retention to move on with their teaching career and not have to wait till May 15th. So that's my testimony. I'm happy to answer any questions that you representatives may have.
Thank you. Representative Ledoux.
You mentioned that the May 15th date would be too late for a number of job fairs. Don't you think with a change of the date that job fairs would probably also change their dates too?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I think if any teacher is non-retained, a tenured teacher, and wants to move on with their career, I mean, it could change some of the job fairs held in Alaska, like at the Captain Cook and others, but it may not change job fair dates, I mean, that are held in other states. If an art teacher from Palmer is non-tenured and needs to go find a job in Minnesota, it's not going to change a Minnesota job fair date by changes that we make in Alaska. That's my supposition.
Representative Drummond.
You know, thank you, Madam Chair. In other words, the earlier the better after the legislature makes up its mind as to what education funding is going to look like.
Through the chair to Representative Drummond, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think the more time you can give folks that want to move on with their teaching career, if they are non-retained, certainly the better. Because I think when I testified a month ago, I was thinking, oh, they're going to have to go through a big list of teachers to get to these tenured teachers, and wasn't looking at the perspective that has been drummed into me here over this past 4 or 5 days. So yeah, I think the earlier date the better, but also realizing that the legislative business, you know, hopefully it'll be conducted by midnight April 14th this year, but it'll be midnight April 20th next year, so there needs maybe some flexibility in that date. Thank you.
Representative Sadler.
I actually comment on such a question. Different bodies of this legislature have at different times had different interpretations of the statutory versus the constitutional time limit on a session. So if those that interpret it as being 121 days, would put it about May 15th.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, you are correct.
Sadly.
Thank you, Mr. Alcantara.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
With that, we'll go, Representative Seaton.
I'd just like to note that we do have this March 18th letter and from the NEA, and I appreciated that they supported the literacy and the inflation proofing, just a note for the record. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
With that, we'll go to OffNet. We do have Steve Atwater online. Steve, are you with us? Steve Atwater? He's no longer online, I hear. With that, we'll go in the audience. We have Bruce Johnson.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bruce Johnson, the Executive Director for the Alaska Council of School Administrators, and represent principals, business officials, and superintendents. And our membership is behind this bill 100%. We obviously are very concerned about increasing pupil transportation cost and appreciate the effort that's gone into both inflation proofing that for 3 years, as well as then hopefully lining up those contracts in such a way that we can all save money by doing that. Early literacy is key to our success, and anything that comes our way there is great news, and getting parents and reaching out to parents is very, very beneficial. Regarding the last issue, obviously we enjoy the flexibility that this would provide individual districts. I would like to assure you, and I think I did this in my earlier testimony before you, is that districts don't wait until that magic time to do this. They know that if they wait too long, teachers are going to that feel vulnerable will start seeking other positions. As I think I mentioned in my last testimony on this issue, that it's not uncommon for our western rural districts to offer contracts in February based on the amount of money that they anticipate coming their way, which usually is the current year funding. They kind of count on that, and they don't really reach beyond that. So they're doing that as an effort to preserve teachers, specialists NEA was just talking about, as well as their core teachers. While there may be a few more that are sitting on the fence as districts are trying to figure out their full financial picture, this gives good flexibility, and you're trying to retain people to best meet the needs of your district and the students being served. So with that, end my testimony.
Do we have any questions? Thank you very much. We'll go to OffNet. Mike Coons, are you with us?
Yes, ma'am. Mike Coons. I'm calling from Lazy Mountain, and I'm representing myself. First of all, if NEA is against it, I'm for it. That's just bottom line for me. When it comes down to this deal on tenure, I was just taking a couple notes, because I really wasn't planning on speaking, but when I heard this, I had to. School administrations at this point in time, they already figure out how that budget is working, and they're already getting up the pink slips.
Hey, Mike. Mike, can you speak a little closer to the phone or a little bit louder? We don't seem to hear you that well.
Okay.
I mean, we kind of lost you at the if NEA was for it, you're against it.
Okay. Presently, school administrations give out pink slips prior to the legislature finalizing the education budget. The teachers who do not have tenure just as easily figure that out if may be getting a pink slip. I'm unemployed and my wife works, but we both know how to use Alexis, so we're always constantly looking for other jobs. If you kind of know that you're a non-tenured teacher and you're watching the legislature, and you kind of get a good feel that this budget is not going to be good for you, there's nothing that says you can't be putting out resumes ahead of time. And if you don't get a thing slip, you just pull the resume back. not a big deal. So this whole I fully support the May 15th date. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Coons. Is there anybody else in the audience that wishes to testify? Testimony is now closed, and we'll bring the discussion back to the committee. Representative
Seaton. Madam Chair, I'd like to offer a conceptual amendment to the bill. Would it be appropriate this time?
Let's do it.
And conceptually, Madam Chair, it'd be a new Section 7, and that would be the language from our bill, CS for House Bill number 12, EDC, Section 3. And so that would read something like Section 4 of this Act is repealed November 1st, 2015. So,
I'll object for discussion.
And Madam Chair, going back to our conversation, and when we adopted that amendment, there is an intention to do a statewide coordinated pupil transportation contracts. This would mean that the October 2015 CPI would be in place, and then this provision would, so that would be there for the 2015 year. But then this provision would no longer be there, so when we were negotiating contracts statewide, there wouldn't be a provision in existing law that was governing a CPI increase. And so that's why we adopted it in the House Committee. I've talked to the sponsor, and it was a friendly amendment for them.
Thank you. Any other discussion?
I think that's very important because the possibility of doing a statewide contract increases the numbers, and when you have increased numbers, we may have increased people that would apply just because of that. People aren't thinking of trying to, from the lower 48 to come up here because there's not enough numbers weren't worth it. But this might make a change so that we will have competition. And when you have competition, then that usually means that things could be cheaper. So so for that reason, I'm in favor of this, and I will remove my objection.
And to remind the committee, I think that that was our discussion before, the reason we wanted to bridge the gap, if you will, from now until those bus contracts was just for that sake. For what it's worth, we do have the superintendent from MATSU online. If there's a will to hear any pros or cons from the MATSU, I'm sure she'll be glad to testify, but we've been here before. Sir, would you like to hear from her in regards to this? Seeing no will to hear. Sorry, she is online for another bill. Representative Ledoux.
I'd like to hear from her about the May 15th date versus an April 20th date.
For what it's worth, we have heard from her in regards to that before, but I'm sure she'd be glad to speak to it.
Madam Chair.
Open up.
Thank you. Representative Seaton.
I believe Representative Wilson still has an objection to the adoption of the amendment. You removed it. And I would just like to note that then the fiscal note that runs through 2019 should be revised to reflect the date at which we repeal this section of the bill.
Okay. That is now on record. Does anybody object to opening up testimony to hear from? Sorry, go ahead.
Yes,
I haven't passed that.
Yes.
You have to say it. I'm sorry. Your amendment, seeing no objection to your conceptual amendment, has passed. Before the record, November 1st, 2015, and the fiscal notes will so reflect that. Representative Ledoux, did you still want to hear from?
Yes.
Superintendent. With that in mind, Superintendent Paramo, are you online?
Yes, Madam Chair.
And give me just a second to open up public testimony, to hear your testimony again in regards to the pink slip dates. Public testimony is now open. Dr. Paramo, would you speak to those dates?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Was there a specific question or just in general?
I think that the question, we've heard some more information from Mr. Alcantara, and I think that Representative Ledoux wanted to make sure that you were still on board with those dates, I'm guessing.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, these dates are really in line, as we've testified before, with the knowledge of funding, both at the state level as well as the local level. And really what it does is exactly what Bruce Johnson said. It allows the flexibility of school districts to ensure that we have the right teachers and the best teachers for the courses for which we need to offer our students in the following year. And for instance, Mat-Su School District, the date this year was for tenured teachers, March 16th. We offered our tenure contracts in February. So there is evidence that when school districts do know their finances, they move ahead. We want to have the very best school districts. We want to have the very best teachers, and we want them to stay with us. And so this isn't something that we would choose to do. It just allows us time in a time reductions, really, and a time of kind of a pay-as-you-go kind of year to year where we're not sure of the funding we'll have, that we can make the right decisions and not have contracts for which we cannot afford.
I just wanted to know whether you had heard the concerns of Mr. Alcantara, who suggested an April 20th date, and if you had, whether you had any specific response to the April 20th versus the May 15th.
Through the chair, Mat-Su would prefer the date in May. Initially, when the legislature closes down, it would take a pretty significant amount of work to turn the contracts around by the 20th. In addition, our local contribution and our local government reviews what happens at the state level prior to assigning an amount to Mat-Su. So we have to wait. They wait for yours, and then we wait for their appropriation, and then we can move forward, because school districts really, we don't generate the funds. We just receive the funds graciously and gratefully to educate the kids, but we have to let those legislative bodies decide first.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Paramo, and we'll do this again. Testimony is now closed. And we have brought this back to the committee. And I will ask, is there a motion to move this bill? Representative Seaton.
Madam Chair, I'd move the CS for Senate Bill 57 as amended, and that was version Y from committee with individual recommendations, attached fiscal notes, which are to be adjusted based on our amendment.
Thank you. Committee substitute for Senate Bill 57 version Y with amendments has moved from the House Education Committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations. Thank you. Since we're somewhat pressed for time, we'll fill out the paperwork as we move along. Next, we'll hear House Bill 179. The sponsor has a CS that will align with the Senate companion bill, I understand, so if the sponsor would like to come forward, we'll fill out our paperwork as we listen to you and move along.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Benny Naya, representative for District 40. Thank you for hearing my bill this morning, House Bill 179, an act providing for public school funding for Internet services. I believe there is a committee substitute before you. The E-Rate program provides federal funding for a portion of a school district's telecommunication costs. House Bill 179 will provide state funding for that portion not covered by the federal discount. Excuse me. For fiscal year 2014, that amount is approximately $13.8 million. This bill also allows school districts to increase their bandwidth. Right now, about one-third or approximately 170 schools have less than 10 megabits per second of internet services. House Bill 179 will allow school budgets below 10 megabits per second to come up to that minimum level and receive state reimbursement. For schools that are already at that level or higher, House Bill 179 allows those schools to increase 10% over their prior year and receive state funding. This bill does not limit any school district to higher increases, but does limit the state contribution at that point. This bill will benefit all school districts across the state. House Bill 179 will assist school districts with their internet needs and bring all schools across Alaska to a minimum level of internet services. Thank you again for hearing this bill today. I'm happy to answer any questions the committee may have. My staff is available, and there are people from the department online to answer questions at will. And I do have explanation of changes if you want to hear those.
Representative Seaton.
Madam Chair, I'd move that we adopt as our working document CS for House Bill 179 version U.
Seeing no objection,
version U.
Okay. And for clarification, for those who may not have heard, version U. And it's a great time for the bill sponsor to tell us what those changes are. So go ahead.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. The planners of changes are as follows. Remove telecommunication from the bill on advice from the department. Remove Title I references on advice from the department. For fiscal year 2014, the state match would be the total of the applicant's share. This is considered the base amount. Beginning in fiscal year 15, for those school districts whose internet services are faster than 10 megabits a second, the amount they are eligible to receive is limited to 10% increase from the previous year's amount. Beginning in fiscal year 2015, for those school districts whose internet services are slower than 10 megabits a second, the amount they are eligible to receive can increase more than 10% from the previous year's amount. Effective date is also added. That is the explanation for number changes, and that concludes my introduction for House Bill 179. Do you have any questions?
I know that the bill sponsor does have some invited testimony online, and I think his Superintendent Cowan, are you online?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. This is Peggy Cowan, North Slope Borough School District Superintendent. Hello?
Yes, Superintendent, we hear you loud and clear. Can you speak to the bill, please?
Yes, thank you. I am calling in support of House Bill 179. Thank you, Madam Chair. Kalyanukpuk, Representative Nagiak, for your sponsorship. And thank you, committee members, for hearing me this morning. This bill supports all districts in Alaska. Increasing costs and flat funding are challenging districts to continue to provide the programs our students need. This bill will provide funding for internet services.
Peggy?
Peggy,
can you hear us?
Yes.
I don't know if it's us reading or you, but if you'll be a little bit louder, we'll hear you better.
Okay. Let me try this. I'm getting closer. Thank you.
Much better.
This bill will provide funding for internet services that are a critical component of the 21st century education program. A big advantage of this bill is that it allows the state to leverage federal funds. The federal E-rate program will continue to pay for a percent of districts' telecommunication services. If districts are able to increase the amount spent on telecommunications because of state support, the federal government will provide more funding to Alaskan schools. I can answer any questions specific to the North Slope Borough's district's effect on this, and the encourage you to support this bill.
We do have some questions. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Superintendent Cowan, can you explain exactly how that E-rate works so that we have it on record, what the process is and how it works actually right now?
Yes. Through the Chair, Representative Wilson, I cannot explain exactly how the E-rate process works, but I can explain conceptually because it is quite complex. It is actually a per-school determination. It is a application. The application requires that districts bid out their telecommunication services, and then once the bid is done and the districts choose the level of telecommunication services through a formula that is established by poverty rate, school districts across the state get reimbursed for the telecommunications for individual schools, and then there's an average rate per district. So, for instance, I was recently talking to another rural superintendent, and they are reimbursed at 90%, and the North Slope Borough School District is reimbursed at a 67% rate. So, it is a formula based on how much you spent. That reimburses us how much you spend on telecommunications. So therefore, a district who spends more will actually get more back. And again, a level of reimbursement is determined by poverty in a district or schools.
Okay, follow up.
Representative Wilson.
So explain to me if exactly how it would work in your school system if this passed.
What would happen in this if this passed in our school system? There would be the gap between the federal payment and this year's payment of around $600,000 would be paid by the state. My understanding in the bill language is that in future years, starting in 2015, districts would be allowed to increase and get reimbursed for up to 10 megabytes. The 10 megabytes is a big step forward for many rural districts. And for instance, our schools, the school I'm sitting in today, Point Hope, I'm calling from Point Hope, Alaska, we have 2.5 to 3 megabytes for our rural schools, these village schools. And so this would allow us to increase the bandwidth. And therefore, it's still rudimentary, 10 megabytes. Those of you sitting right today in the legislative chambers are enjoying 100 megabytes. That's how broad your broadband is. Ours here in the school I'm sitting in today is 2.5. This would allow rural districts to go up, such as mine, to go up to 10 megabytes in 2015.
Thank you very much.
It allows school districts that are already past 10 megabytes, which are some rural districts like those in the Southwest that are on microwave and those in the rail belt and urban areas that are served by cable, to go to increase by 10%. But for my districts, it would allow all schools to reach the 10 megabytes 2 years out.
Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent. Are there any more questions for Superintendent Cowan? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Superintendent Cowan, I'm not sure if you're the best person to ask this question, but being as how the North Slope School District might be involved in it, I'm going to ask you. I understand the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development is leading a statewide broadband task force with the goal of providing increased bandwidth for rural communities across Alaska. Would you know how this legislation would comport or mesh with that effort? Is this an effort to do what you can now and wait for the task force to do its work later, or what can you tell me about that?
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Sadler. This is not going to solve the broadband issue, but it's a step in the right direction. We have huge equity issues across the state in terms of student access to what everyone in this day and age and the rest of the nation and most of the state takes for granted. That's what the broadband addresses. This is a step that task force addresses, and I believe that they are, I think this is 10 megabytes. I think their challenge, I think it's like 450 megabytes or some huge number like that to all rural communities. So, I mean, it's way beyond this. It's scales beyond this. If it's not 450, it's at least like 200 or something like that. So I'm sorry, I'm not an expert on this. But so this simply allows us to take advantage of what our current technology will allow us to, but that we currently can't afford. It will obviously also help us with be able to take some distance courses so our students can be compete for the Alaska Performance Scholarship. Right now, many of those kind of courses are not offered in our small communities, and being able to take courses online and have a reasonable bandwidth to do that, this will enhance this. It is not a fix, and we still need microwave or cable or some other thing that those kind of task force are looking at, and the scale that those task force are looking at is, you know, is way beyond what this is. This is still very rudimentary, but again, it's an improvement, and it helps students across. This also helps students across the state. Thank you.
Thank you. And just a follow-up comment, and certainly understand the benefits of internet access. We just did pass through a bill earlier that provides for internet website to assist in early literacy. So we are cognizant of the benefits. Appreciate you bringing them forward.
Thank you. Seeing no more questions for Superintendent Cowan, is there anybody in the is there anybody from the department that would like to testify? Seeing nobody from the department, maybe we've seen somebody from the department coming forward. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Linda Thibodeau, and I'm the director of the Division of Libraries, Archives, and Museums, and I'm here to answer any questions you might have for me.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for coming forward. I have a couple questions. Right now, each school individually tries to contract out for these services.
Through the chair, to Representative Wilson, I believe that it is done through the school district, but the services, as discussed in this bill, go to each school individually.
Okay. We follow up. We have talked about doing a statewide contract for transportation to save schools money. I have no idea if this would even be possible, but could there be such a thing if we did this for these services?
Through the chair to Representative Wilson, that would be a huge leap forward from what this bill offers, but conceptually it is possible. The E-rate requirements, part of the E-rate requirements are competitive bidding, so it would have to be the kind of statewide contract that you could buy off of, but we're not required to buy from for the purposes of competition for the internet providers.
But it would be possible. I don't even know who provides this. I'm assuming it's GCI and ACS and all these different groups, and they, as a total, then could bid for this?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, they would bid to school districts individually. And then the districts would buy either from the bid or from the contract. According to the E-rate, they have to go with the cheapest option.
So would it be advantageous at all then for us to do anything statewide?
Possibly it would be very advantageous. It would have to be something that would take a lot of study.
Well, that's a good thought then.
Good thinking there. Do we have any more questions? Seeing none, thank you for coming forward. We'll now move to public testimony, and we do have some folks on OffNet that have been waiting. Dave Jones from Kenai, are you with us?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'm here. My name is Dave Jones. I'm the Assistant Superintendent for the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, and I'm calling today to testify in favor of House Bill 179. It has a limited effect in our district. We have three or four schools that we would be able to bring up to the 10 meg limit, but I think that it's one of the instances where we are interested in it for ourselves as our district to provide the better service to those few schools that we don't have yet, but we also want to testify on behalf of all the schools and all the children across the state that this is will provide great opportunities for those students. So we are definitely in favor of this bill. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Do we have any questions for Representative Wilson?
Thank you. I just have a question. You heard the comments between someone from the department and myself. Do you have any comments about that part of it?
I think that the way it's done now is services are bid out on a district-wide basis, and then the reimbursement that we receive from the federal government is determined on an individual basis. And I think that when those companies look at opportunities within a district, the volume, you know, depending on how big your district is, there's quite a bit of volume. But I think if they looked at it on a statewide basis and there was the ability to work a statewide bid, I think there'd be an opportunity. It probably would bring competition, would bring the prices down. But I'm not sure on a statewide basis if there would be single companies that had the ability to do the entire state.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, we'll go to off-net to Dr. Dina Paramo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Dina Paramo from Matsuboro School District. I'm providing testimony on behalf of Matsu in support of House Bill 179, an act providing for public school funding for telecommunications or Internet services. Each year, Matsu invests heavily in technology to ensure its students are well-connected. We provide online courses, tutorials, and lessons that serve to enrich activities that take place within the traditional classroom. Digital learning is an integral part of the district's curriculum. Students master online research methods, coursework, and learn what it means to be a digital citizen so they can adequately prepare for a future where they will be immersed in technology, both in higher ed and the workplace. It's our responsibility to prepare them for this. In recent years, we have partnered with service providers to increase our wide area network, and with this infrastructure in place, more schools are connected than ever before. But with this connectivity come higher costs. In fiscal year 2013-14 alone, Matsu will contribute $475,000 to the local share of E-rate. On behalf of the Matsu School District, I thank you for supporting HB 179 and for your overall commitment to providing technology in the classrooms across Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Paramo. Do we have any questions? Seeing none, thank you. We'll now go to the room. We have Bruce Johnson.
Good morning again. For the record, I'm Bruce Johnson, the Executive Director for the Alaska Council of School Administrators. And so you've heard from both urban and rural. This is something that would be very beneficial, help with some high costs that are ever increasing, as we all know, and probably most importantly is provide greater Internet access in our smallest, most remote areas where many times we have the smallest schools as well, and we're stretched to provide the kind of course offerings that we would really like to. So we're fully supportive of this and thank the sponsor and others for their insights in doing this. Thank you.
Do we have any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. Is there anybody else in the room or online that would like to testify? And I see Mr. Carl Rose coming forward.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, I'm Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. I'll make this brief. We are very much in favor of this piece of legislation. As you are aware, digital technology is a part of our everyday lives, and we're trying to extend that into our schools. So with that, I appreciate the sponsors' recognition and submission of this piece of legislation, and we support it at the AASB. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there anybody else online or in the room that would like to testify? Seeing none, public testimony is now closed. And we'll bring this discussion back to the committee. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I can see the benefit of this program. Obviously, the benefits of internet access to clinics and schools across the state are manifest. And I think this is a good program that the federal government, I think it's good that they reimburse us. I'm intrigued by a footnote in the legislative research article from March 17, 2000, in which one gentleman who is an educator in Colorado says, it might be a better fix would be to change the Federal Communication Commission's rules to allow schools to buy wireless equipment so that they could get service one place and spread all over their schools, which would be a fix that would prevent the necessity of annual federal expenditures and annual state subsidies, et cetera, et cetera. It looks like it would be a good one-time fix, and I might take this up and see if we could change that federally. It might be a better long-term fix. But in the meantime, this is a good effort.
Representative Ledoux.
Schools can't use wireless right now?
Read the footnote.
Yeah. Any other did you want us to answer that question or get?
I guess I'll read the footnote.
Okay. Yes. I guess I didn't mean to be rude about it. And schools can use wireless. And I think the footnote addresses a bigger issue, and specifically in regards to a federal issue. Do we have any other questions? Comments? Does the committee wish to move this bill forward? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move CS for House Bill 179, version U, from the committee. We have attached this one out in individual recommendation.
Seeing no objection, committee substitute for House Bill 179, version U, is moved from the House Education Committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations. Wow, we're moving along. We'll now continue with House Bill 190. We'll call Representative Nagyak.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and the rest of the panel.
You're very welcome. Thank you for bringing this forward. With that, we'll move to House Bill 190 and continue on. And the bill sponsor or staff will come forward. And seeing that we've got a good 52 minutes left, moving on.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Representative Paul Seaton, House District 30. We did hear this bill, although not all members were able to be present on the last hearing. So just to review, House Bill 190, the impetus for this came from the testimony from the ANSEP program that testified to House Education earlier this year, in which case college courses were being taken, but weren't getting the full credit for the course because there hadn't been enough seat time developed, and we I think all agreed that we wanted to move education along and not have people sitting studying things that they already knew. So what this does, it allows students who demonstrate mastery of the course content to challenge and test out of high school courses and receive the academic credit. It leaves the demonstration of the mastery of the subject to the discretion of the school district. It requires the district to provide an option for students to challenge courses through an assessment. Now, that could be an existing final exam, those kind of things. It doesn't require a statewide assessment, a standardized test, or any such thing. The credits would apply for fulfilling the Alaska Performance Scholarship, but not necessarily factored into a GPA if the district policy is not to have a grade assigned. And it does not establish that the receiving credit for one course also receives credits for any prerequisites that particular school may have required for that course. So currently there's just no requirement for districts to do this. There are several districts that do. In your packet you have the policy statement, a credit by choice of the Anchorage School District, which is one example of a policy. Matsu, Kenai, others have policies. There's no intention here to say that all policies must be the same. We are letting the districts determine what their policy is. Some don't allow, like the Anchorage one, doesn't allow PE to be challenged or certain lab courses to be challenged. It will be hard to demonstrate that. However, there are VOTEC courses, you know, might be a welding course where you could challenge that if the instructor would be able to demonstrate, but it wouldn't just be a written test, obviously. The district would decide that on their own, and there are districts across the state that allow challenge of courses. This does not mean that there are courses that we're saying that every school district has to offer courses that they don't offer. This is only challenging for credit with courses that are offered in those schools at this time. It doesn't influence whether they do correspondence courses or anything else, how they acquire the knowledge. It just provides that students can take these courses by challenge. It was very interesting the other day that one of the, in public testimony, it was brought up that one of these aspects could be you could have someone that has a year-long course, let's say in algebra, that could be having all kinds of problems, whether it's a divorce in the family, whether it's just whatever the situation, that they would fail or they didn't turn in their homework, and that could be a policy of the school. If you don't turn in the homework in the first semester, you fail that semester, but you're still in the course, the year-long course, you pass and you demonstrate mastery of the whole course, but you would have to sit through the first semester again. So that's just because it those things don't make sense for keeping students engaged and progressing education. So that's what this bill is about. It does not mandate individual policies in the schools. It just says that each school has to develop their own policy to allow students to progress more rapidly. And I like I say, you have that three-page document that talks about course by credit in Anchorage and how those are, that they even have a $85 fee that that students must pay, because you have to have a teacher develop an assessment and take care of that. So there's nothing in here that limits the how the policy goes forward in the school district. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. You know, I think some classes would be real easy to do. You know, give them the test again, see if they can pass the test. So that would be that would be no extra work for a teacher. However, for some of them, it would be. So I would say it would depend on this on the class, but $85 a class. Wow. That's a lot to me, but I think that they should be able to challenge, and because we none of us really know the circumstances that come up in families, and if they want to try it again, they've gone through the rest of or another semester and passed that. Obviously, they know the work from the first semester. If they're on to the next, they have to know what was in that first one. So it kind of makes sense to me, and I think it's probably a pretty good bill.
And I'd like to make a comment in regards to this. I have seen where somebody won the keyboarding contest in eighth grade, and he was at 100 words a minute, but because there was a rule you had to take keyboarding before you get to your next course, Here's this kid taking keyboarding again before he could take. He should have been able to challenge that clearly. You know, he had keyboarding down. So I think that's what the bill addresses, that there are some kids, just like we as adults have our hobbies and our interests that we're really quite good at, and those are the ones to say, challenge this course, move on to the more challenging courses that are out there. It simply makes sense, in my opinion. With that, Representative Sadler.
I'd never heard the term challenge a course. I heard, you know, test out, but in that just interesting use of the word. I never heard it before. But the first section requires that a school district shall establish an assessment tool and a standard. That's going to cost somebody something to make that test. I don't know if the teacher in a certain class would just provide a student the final exam or whatever, but I did notice the fiscal note was a zero for the state, but I do anticipate that school districts would have to bear some cost in coming up with a new fair assessment tool. What's your understanding of what a fair assessment tool might be, or how would you envision this thing actually taking effect on the ground?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, you know, I really think that in most circumstances, you've got a teacher that's teaching the subject, and they're probably going to take a final exam, whether it's that year's or last year's final exam, and they're going to give the final exam to the student. Now, we're talking about, say, a math course or something that is totally book learning and demonstration by a test. There's other things that have to be demonstrated by actual production, or like a welding course. I cannot envision a welding instructor saying, take this written test, and if you pass this written test, you're going to challenge the course. So, so that really doesn't cost a lot of money. Now, Anchorage has a policy that a teacher's individual time will be there, and they will develop that assessment, and they will have a separate session with that student, and so they have an $85 application fee for the, and that in your backup material is their program number 5, which is credit by examination, and so that's their policy. I'm not saying that every district across the state needs that same policy, and I'm sure that if there's students that are from disadvantaged families, I'm sure there's scholarships for those kind of things generally that take place. But so there's a lot of flexibility here. There's no mandate that somebody has to design a separate assessment tool for every single student.
I would just a follow-up question or actually comment. I would hope that school districts that do take the time and the expense to develop assessment tools other than just the final exam, which could be fair in some circumstances, would share that with other districts around the state so we don't have to reinvent the wheel each different place. And I think as the state goes to more consistent curriculum standards, that might be easier to do so.
And for what it's worth, we do have somebody with a MATSU, and I'm somewhat familiar with how that program works, and I think that they can speak to some of the assessments. Do we have any other questions for Representative Seaton before we move to public testimony? Representative Wilson.
At the appropriate time, I think we need to look at on page 1, line 9 or 10 and 11. I think we need to look at that, and because right now it says that the school district will shall. And I think we need to look at that, because the way it's written, they would have to do it for every single course provided by the district all at once. And I think maybe we need to look at that and give a little bit of flexibility as a challenge comes up or something like that, but as the proper time comes up. Otherwise, we're asking the schools to do it for every single course that they provide, and that's I don't think we need to do that.
And it's possible that folks that have already done it, maybe they can speak to that and give their suggestions. So, you know, if you, Representative Drummond.
I agree with Representative Wilson. They shouldn't have to do it until the opportunity comes up.
Sure.
Or the course is challenged, because they won't all be challenged. So.
Okay. And Madam Chair, just just to put on the record, it's not the intention of the sponsor that every that they have to go through and establish a assessment tool for every course. I mean, especially those that aren't being challenged. And you know, that it would be on a case basis when you do that. But I think that the districts, and when they testify, maybe we'll get their answers, whether they wanted to have an assessment tool. They didn't want to just be, you can do this without some assessment. They wanted a teacher to make an assessment. So, in other words, you don't just challenge and they say, oh, well, you're a good guy. We'll give you that. They have to do an assessment and demonstrate mastery. The definition mastery is left up to the district. However, that's, you know, they also establish what their passing and failing grades are and each level of A, B, and C, et cetera.
Seeing no more questions, we'll open up public testimony and go to OffNet. Gene Stone, are you here? Let's back up. I know he's not here. Are you online?
Yeah, I'm online. I'm here, Representative Gaddis. Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear, and I'm not sure if you heard some of the questions in regards to mastery and what I'm showing here. That you didn't necessarily have a testimony, but you were available for questions. And some of the questions that came up were, I should say, questions and statements regarded having the school districts having to have had assessments in advance versus when students ask for those challenges. And I guess the bigger question is, can you speak to how you envision or how it works in the MATSU?
Sure. Yeah, and Representative Gaddis says we don't see this as a one-size-fits-all. There's just, you know, a number of different circumstances that you've got to tailor to make this thing work. But, you know, it's not like we've put something in place where kids just line up and say, I'm ready to come take a test and challenge this course. So basically it involves a student working with a guidance counselor, with an administrator, and through possibly a teacher recommendation that a student might have already demonstrated enough skills that maybe they should look at, instead of having further seat time, challenging the course. You can do this in a number of ways with our online learning programs through APEX, and we're moving forward with a comprehensive credit recovery piece where if maybe a student's already gone through a course and has failed that course but has had significant seat time with that course, within that online they could go in, they could demonstrate it where at what point you know, where they should really start. And that maybe they had demonstrated that they've mastered about 60% of the objectives, and so it might just, you know, take them 4 or 5 weeks to complete that course and then recover the credit that they had previously lost. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to make students sit through a full semester or something if they already have mastered a significant part of that course. And then there's also CLEPing, where a student that wants the college credit could make arrangements to CLEP a course at the college level. That would be an arrangement they'd have to make, then demonstrate to the district that they'd taken the course, and then we would give them the college credit, the dual credit, the college credit as well as the high school credit. You know, of course, we also have our middle college model, and the middle college model allows the students to, you know, get the dual credit too, and so some of that language fits this bill too. And then in terms of, you know, kids that, you know, there's circumstances where, let's say a student took an Algebra 1 course and failed the first semester, and then the second semester stayed in that same algebra course, and at the end of the year in a summative final demonstrated mastery, it would only make sense that we, based on that test, that we give them credit for the full year, because that test demonstrates that he's demonstrated readiness to move on. It wouldn't make a whole lot of sense that he's demonstrated mastery of the second semester of algebra, make him go back and do semester one of algebra one, and then throw him out of sequence for geometry and algebra two. So those are just a few examples of how we address this.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. Do we have any Representative Sadler?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Stone, just curious, how many students do try to challenge or test out actually succeed, and how many are not successful at doing so?
Well, I don't have a statistic in front of you. Like I said, we wouldn't steer a student that direction if we didn't feel like there was a reasonable, we had a high degree of confidence that the student was going to demonstrate success in that. We don't just open it up and automatically. So when it happens, we feel fairly confident. So I'd say the majority of the time when it happens, I think it's going to be more frequent too as we as we've entered into this credit recovery piece with Apex Learning.
Okay. Another question, just offhand, what is your district's experience? Do you have a pretty good stock of assessments that you think would be serviceable for this purpose for all the different, the language of the bill says that the district shall prepare assessments for courses provided, and it implies every course. Do you think you have a pretty good selection of assessment tools already, or will you have to create new ones?
I wouldn't say that we do. That's one of the reasons why we've gone further along with this Apex piece, especially for the credit recovery part. Again, that's something that we've invested in as a district. It would require, some districts to on their own to determine what they were going to use for their assessment tool.
Would you be willing, just a last thought, would you be willing to share your assessment tools with other districts? Is there any proprietary?
Obviously have to invest in Apex if that was what they wanted to do for the online piece. The other ones are basically from just a teacher test generated test of the curriculum. So that credit, as I described about a student taking Algebra 1, that would come from a year-end final. And, I'm assuming that would be fairly similar within a district that teachers give a year-end final to demonstrate overall mastery of a, say, an Algebra 1 or an Algebra 2, and based on that evidence, teacher then could say, he's demonstrated mastery of the full scope and sequence of this algebra course. Even though he failed that first semester, I would recommend that we give him credit for the first semester and move him on.
And if I could, for the committee's sake, you've mentioned APEX. And APEX is a program in which the MATSU has invested in. It's an online credit recovery course. And
that's in part. And it also offers AP courses, but that's, one component of it.
And I guess the question was, would you share that with other districts? And for folks not understanding APEX, what we heard you say is that the other districts also needed to make the financial commitment to APEX as well.
Yeah, if that's the direction. Anchorage does a combination of Pearson and APEX, and so we're focused on using the APEX online learning.
Representative Sadler.
My last question, thank you for indulgence. It's been a lot of years since me and Algebra 1, so I don't recall if the final exam in that kind of class actually does encompass the entire scope of the year's study of algebra, or if it's just the second half of the school year. So my question is it a fair assessment? Are final exams actually a full assessment of a student's understanding of the entire range of what algebra requires?
That's something that a district would really have to make a determination. What would you, for a student like that, would you incorporate some elements of that first semester, or would you feel confident enough that that second semester, if he's mastering those second semester things, would be evidence enough? Again, I think that these things are come down to, you know, a district having latitude in making their decisions as to when they think students demonstrated readiness to move on.
I can see that'd be a lot easier in algebra than it would be for literature, but thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Stone? We do have Bruce Johnson in the audience. He'll step forward. Thank you, Gene.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bruce Johnson, the Executive Director for the Alaska Council of School Administrators. And obviously, my membership wants to stand tall on the whole nature of continuous progress. Seat time is becoming increasingly obsolete in some courses. Obviously, there are some courses, lab courses, and others, production courses, that perhaps it would be very difficult to actually test out of it. We're encouraged by the conversation as this bill has moved forward in the conversation that it is in the hands of the districts to figure out how best to make a determination of whether or not the student has met the standards associated with a particular course. When it originally came out, that was the concern. How can we don't have the resources, we don't have the time to sit down and get all of these final exams put together. But as we've gone forward here, it's much, much broader. You know, you could use the standards-based assessments results to help make that determination. We've heard some of the districts talking about multiple approaches, not just a final exam, and a variety of other tools that could be deployed on an individual basis. So we're becoming increasingly comfortable with this idea and believe that it is in the best interest of students. And as we move forward with the Common Core, our new standards, and all of that evolves, this will probably become much easier for us as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Do we have any questions? Representative Sadler.
And I'll make a brief thank you, Madam Chair. I know that the organization keeps its finger on the pulse of research around the country and around the world. Is testing out or challenge programs, is that something that other educational systems around the world use as a matter of course? Is it trending toward that? Are they already there?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I'm not sure whether other countries are doing it. Certainly other states are doing it and have been doing it for years and years and years. Universities in particular, you know, the ACCUPLACER that they use at the university is really an attempt at assuring that kids are placed properly. And many school districts do something similar to that around the nation. So with continuous progress and the other assessments that we now do at the state level and those sorts of things, this is a necessary part of what we need to start doing to be sure we're not wasting the time of young people.
And is there much cost associated in the school? Is the experience in those states says that there's much cost associated?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, again, I've only worked in two other states, but in those two other states, Illinois and North Dakota, I do not believe that there was significant cost. And, of course, that's some years ago when I was there as well, because I've been here for 30.
Great. Thanks.
Any other questions? Thank you. We do have on off-net Herb Schroeder. Mr. Schroeder, are you there?
Yes, I am. Yep.
And if you'll begin your testimony, reminding to let us know who you are and who you may be with.
Yeah, okay. I'm Herb Schroeder. I'm the Vice Provost and Founder for the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program at the University of Alaska, Anchorage. And thank you for taking my testimony today. We all want our students to excel, and ANSAP, over the course of the past 18 years, raised the bar for education for our students. And we do this by providing incentives to encourage the students to work hard. Now, most ANSAP high school students now complete college courses while they're still in high school. And they take those college credits to the high school and do not earn equivalent high school credit, it becomes a demotivator to hard work. In order to improve our academic outcomes, we have to encourage those students to take college classes while still in high school. Over time, many of those same students are going to be able to graduate from high school early. And so House Bill 190 provides a mechanism to raise the bar and for the students to be rewarded for academic excellence. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any questions for Mr. Schroeder? Thank you, Mr. Schroeder. Is there anyone else online or in the committee room who would like to testify? With that, Representative Seaton.
Could we have the commissioner come up and testify on that line 10 and 11 is what their interpretation of that?
Commissioner Hanley, thank you. Again, introduce yourself for the record. Thank you.
For the record, I'm Mike Hanley, the commissioner for the Department of Education. You'd like a reflection on lines 10 and 11?
Yes. Please.
As per the previous conversation. Lines 10 and 11 speak to the school district shall establish an assessment tool. What I heard in the conversation was that there would be a necessity for a district to do that. I would look at this and say that there's a responsibility for the district to do that. I don't see a specific time to do that. I don't see, my interpretation isn't an immediate. I think that there would be a responsibility for a district. If a student were to challenge it, they wouldn't have the opportunity to say, we don't have an assessment, because you have to have an assessment as per the intent of this language here. So that's, as commissioner, that's the way I read that it wouldn't require a district to stop and develop assessments, but it would require them to have one when a course is challenged.
Representative Ledoux.
So how would you interpret that as happening in a practical matter? I mean, you go someplace and the student wants to challenge a class and everybody's kind of busy and they kind of stonewall. I mean, that kind of thing happens in real life. And so, I mean, how would that work?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, it's difficult for me to speak for superintendents and for districts. I do believe that from the testimony that I heard from districts, that for most courses, a majority of courses, a course to test or an assessment that allows a student to test out of a course would not be particularly difficult. You could look at what the outcomes of the course are. You could pick items from the different assessments throughout that course, combine them into a common assessment. If it was an experiential course, you could find a way to develop that. A district would then, you know, be challenged to meet this law. If a student challenged it and they had never thought of it, they would be a little bit behind the curve and would be responsible for saying, we need to stop now and make sure that we have the opportunity for the student to take that assessment to test out. So you're right that it could be a challenge if it were to happen immediately and they weren't prepared. I trust the superintendent's organization that Bruce Johnson represents, and I tend to communicate with superintendents as well, that if a bill like this were to pass, that both of us would be communicating to superintendents that this is now the expectation that students will be able to test out and to be prepared for that.
Follow-up, Representative Ledoux.
So suppose a student called you and said, hey, I'm trying to test out of whatever, and it's been a month since I told the my school administration that I wanted to test out of that, and somebody told me to look at House Bill 190, and it says that the school district has to set up some sort of a test. What would you do or say?
Through the chair, I always hesitate answering hypotheticals on the record, but I'd be glad to do so. As a commissioner, I would strongly encourage a district to meet the requirements of law and offer that student the opportunity to test out of that class. I think it would behoove the district to be prepared to be able to do that.
Representative Sadler.
This question kind of follows up on that. Might it be appropriate to modify this to include language to say, for example, the school district shall establish upon reasonable request or upon demonstrated demand an assessment tool? I don't know if that's an amendment that the sponsor of the bill would like to consider. I don't want to unjustly or not necessarily limit it, but that would give some protection against having to do the whole fell swoop and just say as needed.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I actually think it's inherent in the process. This is requiring districts to have a policy, requires districts to allow students to do it. I think if you look at the Anchorage School District policy, this will require each district to go through and develop their policies ahead of time. And but if we just say, well, if somebody comes up, then you can think about it, it's going to be the next year before they get around to doing it. So the purpose is exactly what I think the commissioner testified is, if we have it in law that districts, you need to provide a way for an assessment for people challenging courses that you are currently offering. I mean, it's pretty easy for districts to say the teacher that is giving that course will provide an assessment, and that assessment can include the standard-based assessments, or it can include the final test that was given, or independent assessment, however the districts figure that out. But I don't read this as anything going in and saying districts have to stop everything they're doing and go through and develop an assessment for each one of the classes that they teach, because obviously if they are teaching the class, they have to have an assessment tool that they use at the end of the class anyway. The big thing, I think, is that we allow the district to figure out what they are going to determine is mastery of the subject. It doesn't mean that you can get a D on a final test for most districts and say you mastered the subject. It's going to be that you have demonstrated the mastery. In the Anchorage policy that you have in your booklet, it says 90%. To me, that's a pretty high bar. I mean, it's basically saying you have to have an A to test out. I mean, part of the question is what is going to be mastery for the individual districts that people will be able to go to the next course and succeed. I mean, that's almost like saying if someone has a B in a course, they won't succeed in the following course. But I have not put forward in this legislation that the state should hop in and make that determination for the individual districts. We're just trying to get there so that kids aren't spending a lot of time spinning their wheels, getting bored, and like I think I said at the previous meeting, most kids that drop out of school have already passed the high school exit exam, and the reason they're dropping out is because they're held in courses that are not challenging, they're not engaged in, and that's the data we had on dropouts from the previous education committee. The actual data was that those kids, most of them, had passed the high school exit exam. So these are kids who want to go forward and want to move forward and should be able to move forward.
Representative Ledoux.
Well, one of the things that I'm kind of concerned about is that a student might say, I want to test out of this class. And it takes the district so long to give that student the option that by that time the student hasn't taken the class that he might need for graduation, and then he doesn't pass the test, and so that could be a difficulty. Now, with that said, I'm going to assume until I'm shown differently at some time that the districts will get their act together and provide an assessment in a reasonably timely manner. And if it turns out that there are districts that don't, I guess we can revisit that at a later time and stick in some language that says within a certain number of days.
And I guess my comment would be, I think that the districts, they're having, they know that there's great pressure to educate our kids, and our graduate rates are important. And I would have a difficult time thinking that with this bill passing, that they would stand in the way. I think that this, I take it as a just another tool to say, for school boards to say, we need to have a policy, we need to be able to move forward. Kids that already have this, I mean, I can't think of, you know, folks coming in with English as their second language, not their first. Certainly, I would think those kids that are taking those first language courses, that they, I mean, they would clearly be able to test out. I mean, there's some things that common sense tells us that that kids would be able to take. So I agree with Representative Ledoux. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple things, I guess, for the record, I would say that at least it's my intent that this does not require each school district to establish assessment tools for every class. There's a large monopoly of classes, so this is not a mandate to do it all at once, but rather as needed, as reasonable interpretation would indicate. Second, it would be nice if school districts would consider what classes they expect to get the most requests for challenges out and begin to line up their tests for that, certainly as part of the regular test design that would happen. Also, I would declare my intent that there be some discretion on the part of school districts, that an A-plus standard is too high, but B is probably good enough to show mastery. But again, that's up to school district policy. And lastly, I would request that school districts taking up this kind of a challenge program would track how many students take it and how many succeed or fail. That would be a good metric as we come back and reassess the issue in the future if necessary.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Seaton.
Madam Chair, I just, some of the parameters that are in the Anchorage District policy are pretty good to read because it's in there. It says courses by challenge or, it will be listed on the transcript that it's taken by challenge. So it's not as if these things won't be known as well because they actually say, credit by examination is on the transcript, so that's how that was qualified for.
Representative Seaton, so are you saying that you think that on the transcript it should say that, or are you just noting that's what Anchorage does?
I'm just noting that that's what Anchorage does, so that these are policies that can be developed by the school districts. I'm not, again, trying to come in and try and tell every district what they need to do, but these, obviously, districts will take other districts' policies and look at them when they're doing, and many of the things that we're talking about have already been discussed and adopted by varying different districts.
Representative Wilson.
I think that, Madam Chair,
just a moment, I have a little bit of housekeeping myself. Is there anybody else in the room or online that would like to testify? And with that, I will formally close public testimony. I think we got it. And we'll come back to the committee. And Representative Wilson.
Thank you. For some reason, the lines 9 and, or 10 and 11 on page 1 are just stuck in my head here. And I just think that when you look at that, it says a school district shall establish an assessment tool and a standard for demonstrating mastery in secondary school courses provided by the district. And that says, if you look at that, that says they're going to do it for every course provided by the district. It doesn't say in every course, but I think it would be wise for us to maybe at least do a conceptual amendment. And it, maybe it could be up in A even, a school district shall, upon being challenged after within 30 days, provide an opportunity for students enrolled in a secondary school or something. But I Anchorage has got it together. That sure doesn't mean that all the other school districts are going to have it together. And so I just think that we need to, if we're going to put this in and say that they can do this, that a child can do it, then we need to make sure that they will be able to.
I know myself, I'm hearing what you're saying, and I think there should be a timeline that everybody can expect to be able to take the course, determine if they passed it or not, and as Representative Ledoux said, then it doesn't hold up either graduation or taking other courses that they may have needed. So I certainly would agree with a timeline or time period to having formally challenged and then be able to take the test to know where they're going. Yeah, I don't have a specific time period in mind, but I do think that there should be. Does this bill sponsor have any thoughts on that?
Madam Chair, I don't. What I would hate to do is put in something that says, okay, school districts can delay for 30 days giving a course, and so you've got kids sitting in a course for a month. You know, that's the other thing, because I think that when we put in deadlines, they become the time at which it's offered. And so I guess, Madam Chair, I mean, I'm willing to do, if the committee has specific language that they want to put in there. To me, the important thing is to make a requirement that the districts will do something in law, and so when somebody comes forward, they can do it. And I just can't see, if they're offering the course and they have a teacher that's teaching the course, obviously the assessment can easily be made by the teacher that is teaching the course. So it's not as if there's something that we have to create a statewide assessment or anything like that. But as the committee goes through this and looks at it, I just caution that when we put in time frames, often those time frames become the reality, and that becomes, we'll wait and do it then instead of before. So that's my only
question. I'm hearing the bill sponsors say, no matter our good intentions, it's possible that we may have unintended consequences with those good intentions. Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. High school students generally register for classes either at the end of the previous semester, say in May, or early in August, well before school begins. They work with their counselors and all of that, if they still have counselors, to determine what their course is going to be. They know what they've got to take in order to graduate. They're on track. You know, if they're in 10th grade, they're on track. They know what they have to take in the next 2 years in order to be able to graduate. They're already planning that, and the school district should be very aware of where students are. And if one says in May that I want to challenge this class in August or September when school starts, they've got plenty of time to figure that out. I agree with you, though. I don't think, and with commissioner, that I don't think school districts are going to go out and make an assessment for every single class that they offer until it's actually challenged. So that we have to allow some common sense to figure in here.
And you know, we already have a lot of assessments in place, because that's what the bill sponsor indicates, that we're already doing that. So, I mean, to do the other ones that maybe they don't, you know, may take some effort. But Representative Sadler.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm trying to look at this myself and to see if this is sufficient. Certainly, it's implied that if a school district offers classes and assesses whether a student passes those classes and receives credit, they're implied there's some sort of assessment tool. This language in lines 10 and 11 does not specifically refer to challenge out. It can be, no, I guess it does apply to that. So I would ask if a conceptual amendment to the effect of a school district shall establish within a reasonable time following a demonstrated need, an assessment tool and standard. I would leave it to the bill drafters, but not saying 30 days, 60 days, mm-hmm. but within a reasonable time following a demonstrated need might be a way to thread that needle.
Representative Ledoux.
I guess I think that, say, that implied in that they're going to have an assessment tool is the idea that it's within a reasonable time. I mean, I don't really have any problems with saying a reasonable time, but I think it's implicit in the language already.
That would probably be up to the bill drafters. I would not argue, but that's a... Mm-hmm. And certainly, if I may, Madam Chair?
Please.
And certainly that if this, a school district could say, we already have, we have a class, there's a final exam, we met that standard, QED. That might be sufficient.
Any more discussion?
So I guess I would offer a conceptual amendment, but just get it out there and vote it up or down.
Figure out how to do this. Okay, so there's been a conceptual amendment offered, and if you'll read it one more time, please.
Thank you. The amendment would be to page 1, line 10.
Are you moving amendment?
I'm going to propose a moving amendment, yeah. I would propose a conceptual amendment to House Bill 190, version A, page 1, line 10, following the word establish, insert, comma, within a reasonable time following a demonstrated need, comma, such that that line will now read, a school district shall establish, comma, within a reasonable time following a demonstrated need, comma, an assessment tool in a standard four.
Is there any objection to?
He hasn't moved it yet.
And move the amendment.
Madam Chair, I'll object for discussion. And the discussion is just that this was a conceptual amendment. I mean, we're reading it with commas and all. I want to make sure that we're not.
Refer to clauses.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's
so it's a conceptual amendment. Thank you, Madam Chair. I would remove my objection.
Objection has been removed. Any comments? Any objection to the amendment? With that, the amendment passes. And we're back to the, is there a motion to move the bill? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House Bill number 190, version A, as amended out of committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
Seeing no objection, House Bill 190, version A, is moved from the House Education Committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations and amendment. The House Education Committee is now adjourned. Three bills today. Wow.
Yeah, that's okay with me. I think that that's what going to happen anyway. I mean, nobody's going to go out and say, oh,
we got a final exam. We're good.
Yeah, I mean, we got, you know.